We are holding on Yod Amud Beis, the third to last of the middle five line, one in light. Yod Amud Beis. We mentioned yesterday, we talked about Chizkiyah's tefillah when he was sick. We mentioned that connection about how he gavened by Yasef Chizkiyah, Ponov Alakir, he turned his face to the wall. And we talked about a couple of possibilities, what that represents. And one of them was that he mentioned, he said the Isha Shunamis only made one wall, and to be Machnas Orach Elisha, and in the course of that, you revived your son. So how much more so than our family, going back to Shlomo, who has this course of plating the walls of the Heichal with silver and gold, then please help me and heal me in that stuff. So now the Gemara is going to go into the story of the Isha Shunamis a little bit and talk about a couple of things in that story. The pasuk says that the Isha Shunamis says to her husband, Nasana Aliyas Kir Ktana. Let's make now a small Aliyas Kir. So what does Aliyas Kir mean? Rav Shmuel argue what it means.
Had a discussion about Kir, didn't we?
We had before. We discussed what Kir meant in term in connection with Chizkiyahu's tefillah. Now we're going to talk about when it comes to this room that the Isha Shunamis and her husband made for Elisha, what does it mean Aliyas Kir?
It was in the wall, wasn't it?
In the wall, what do you mean? So, one second. Rav Shmuel Chad Amar Aliyah Prua Hoysa. One of them says that what happened was it was an open second floor, the Kiruha, and they put a roof over it. So in other words, it was an Aliyah, it was on the second floor, but Prua, previously it was like more like a porch, and it didn't have a roof over it. Now they put a roof over it and made it into a room that Elisha could stay in. The Chad Amar Chsadra Gdola Hoysa, the other one between Rav and Shmuel, says that it was a large achsadra, a large entryway, which usually an achsadra only has three walls and is open on the fourth. The chokul l'shnayim, and they divided into two by putting in a dividing wall. So the Gemara says, "B'shlem l'mandar am achsadra." I can understand according to the opinion that an achsadra ha'nigachtiv kir. That's what the positive means. It was an obvious kir because they added a wall. Kir means a wall. El l'mandar am aliyah might kir, but if you say that it was a second floor, then what do you mean kir? And Marsha points out, you can't say that it was both, that it was on the second floor, and it needed a roof, and it needed to be divided into two.
You build a wall to make a second floor.
No, you don't build a wall to make a second floor, you build a ceiling. Because you build a ceiling to make a second floor, that's how it works. But the Marsha points out, if it was on the second floor, and they needed to divide it in two with a wall, you'd have a problem, because how do you get to a second floor with a ladder, or stairs, or what have you? And if you divide it, then one of the rooms isn't going to have a way to get up and down. So of necessity, if we say that they divided it, it has to mean it was a ground floor room. So then the question is, what is... So
divide an up floor.
Only if you build a second one, if you build also a new staircase or something, where you have... That's what you're talking about, if you have some way of getting from one room to another. But here, the point is, it's supposed to be Elisha's private room. They're obviously not going to have, therefore, that one of the other rooms.
You divide the second floor with...
No, but then the other room. The other, they didn't have, like, nowadays, you just have hallways, you know, to go through. Every room is going to be used for something. So then what's the point? You know, whoever Elisha is going to have to pass through this other person's room or vice versa. The whole point is it should be... Not necessarily. But the point is, that's it. So if you say Aliyah my kir, and the answer is shekiruha. The word kir in that case doesn't mean a wall. It comes from the word kirui, which means a ceiling. He would say Aliyah's kir means an attic or a second floor or a porch or whatever that they roofed over. Okay, now the other way around. Shlem l'manda oma Aliyah. I can understand according to the opinion it was something on the second floor. Ha'inverstiv Aliyah. El l'manda oma achsadra. But if you say it was an achsadra and that's on the ground floor, why is it Aliyah? My Aliyah. And the answer is it means ma'ula shava batim. According to that, Aliyah doesn't mean the second floor. Doesn't mean an attic. It means the best of houses. So in other words, each opinion has the word Aliyah here. In other words, we're saying you can't take it literally. That means a second floor of a wall, because that wouldn't make any sense. It can't be inside the wall, and the wall's not, in those days, thick, but not that thick, to be able to hollow out a room inside it. So between Rav and Shmuel.
Who was it? In the wall?
Okay, that was Rachav, that was in the wall of Yericho. Wall of the city is much thicker. We're talking about a wall of a house here. So Rav and Shmuel basically are arguing which word of the two should we be taking less literally, Aliyah or Kir. Are we taking Aliyah in the literal sense of a second floor and then taking Kir in the less literal sense of a ceiling? Or are we taking Aliyah in the regular sense of something on the second. Are we taking Aliyah in the not in the literal sense, but rather as a best of as a best of houses, and then we're taking Kir literally that it means they divided over. Okay. Next. The pasuk continues that the Isha Ashunama says to her husband, "V'nasim lo sham mitzvah v'shulchan v'kisei u'menorah." Let's put over here there for him a bed and a table and a chair and a menorah. There are, by the way, there are Maimonim from the Alter Rebbe and from the Friedrich Rebbe and probably from other Rebbeim as well that talk about the Pnimis Seinyonim, what that represents, that the person has to set up for their neshama, they have to set up a little corner over there, a little aliyah skir, and have these things in it, which represents the various part of Avodah. Mitzah, for example, Menorah, for example, represents Shemona Esrei. The Mitzah, I think, represents Kriyas Shema Shalom Mitzah, etc. Anyway,
The Menorah is Shemona
Esrei. I think it says the Menorah is Shemona Esrei, because like the Menorah lights up, and the same thing. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, Omer Abaye v'Tamer Rabbi.
Not 18
candles. No, it doesn't matter. Which is it lights up in person the Shema. Okay. Omer Abaye v'Tamer Rabbi. So Abaye, or some say Rabbi Yitzchak says, when a person is a guest, right, that we're not necessarily, whatever. Well, if a person wants to have hana from other people, like here, where Elisha was willing to accept the Isha Shunamis and her husband's hospitality and to accept the furniture and all, if he wants to, he's allowed to do that. Yehoneke Elisha, he can do that, like Elisha. There's no Isser in it. On the other hand, if a person does not want to have hana from others, al yohana, then he's allowed to not have hana. It's not considered like gafas or ruach. It's not considered like he's showing he's proud, and show like he doesn't have avos yisrael or whatever. Kishmul haramasi, as we find the Shmuel, where he didn't allow himself hana from people. Now, there is some discussion about it and what happened to the Talmud Chacham. First of all, in general, the person not supposed to take present, saying much on a theosia. In particular, Talmud Chacham, we discussed the other day, especially according to the Rambam, is not supposed to be taking pay for his teaching. So one explanation is that we're not just talking about on a regular basis. A person shouldn't be accepting gifts, but we're talking about it as a one-off thing. This is the Isha Shonamis, for example. One second. Another point, Marshall makes, is we're talking about here specifically when they're on the road. When a person's on the road, they don't have as much. No, not so much. It's more dangerous. They don't have their regular resources with them. So therefore, there's more. Therefore, even if we would say that usually a Talmud Chacham shouldn't be allowing people to give him second matanis or whatever as a result of his Torah, but here where he's traveling and he doesn't really have much of a choice is different, right? So we're saying that even so, a person can choose to do like a Lusha or to do like Shmuel.
Second matanis, if it implies that the one who accepts matanis is not going to live?
Yeah, that's the implication there. Okay, so where do we see? Shenemar, so by Elisha, we see from these psukim that he was willing to have Hana because he accepted, they made for him this aliyah kir with the furniture and all, and sure enough, he stayed there every time. Of course, also, if a person is going to do that, then he has to show Akaras HaTov. In this case, we find in the psukim that afterwards, Elisha, either to pay or in Elisha's case, he pays the bracha. He asks, you know, what do they need? Do they need to be talked to the king, to the general or whatever? Turns out they don't have a child, and Elisha gives them a bracha for a child.
And they did.
And they had a child, and they have this whole story, and they have told of Vayera. They had a child, and then that was the child that later on died, and Elisha had to revive him. On the other hand, when it comes to Shmuel, we find he did not have hana from others when he traveled. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, the Pasuk describes how Shmuel,
he didn't want to have.
He wouldn't allow himself to have. Shenema, as we find in the Pasuk describes over there how Shmuel would travel around different parts of Eretz Yisrael to teach Torah and judge and so forth. And the Pasuk says, Shuvosei haramasa, he would return to Ramah, kisham beisa, because there was his house. Now, what do we need to be told? We know that. We know that Shmuel lives in Ramah. It means wherever he went, his house was with him. So he took along basically the equivalent of an RV and would stay and would have all of his household items that he needed. So in other words, kisham beisa doesn't just mean in Ramah. Rashi explains it means when it says earlier in the pasuk that he would go to Beisel and Mitzvah and whatever and judge the Jewish people. Kisham beisa, it doesn't mean that his house was only in Ramah. It means his house was in each of these places because he would bring along his house with him. Bring along a place to live in and a place to have furnishings and whatever so that he doesn't have to have hana from other people. Okay. Going back to the Isha Shunamis, the Pasuk says, Vatomer Elisha, she says to her husband, Hinina Yodaiti ki Isha Lekim Kadoshu, behold, now I know that this is a holy man of Hashem. So what does she think? I know, implying that you don't. What does that mean? Amr Rabbi Yisrael Chanan, Mikansha Isha Makeres Ba'urchen Yerzman Ish. It means that this tells us that women are able to recognize the character of guests better than men. First of all, because they're at home more, also because they need a seira. Then the pasuk continues, Kodeshu, she says he's holy. So the question is, Menoyot, how does she know that he's holy? That he's an Ishalakim. Okay, he's a Navi, he's well known, but how does she, what specifically tells her that he's holy? So again, Rav and Shmuel argue about what that means. One says that she never saw a fly flying over his table when he was eating. So just like we find by the Mizdeah, just like we find by the Mizmikdash, one of the Nisim, it says in Tilkei Avos, Lo Nirah Zvuv, based on the Mitzvachayim, that no flies were ever found in the slaughtering area in the Mizmikdash, because it was a holy place, and therefore the Tumadik creatures like flies are not going to go there. So the same way over here, Elisha's table was on the level of the Mizbeach, and therefore there are never any flies there. She noticed that, and she realized it. Of a Chad Omer, the other one says, Sodin Shal Pishtan Hitziyah Mitzvah, she put linen sheets on his bed, the Loirasa Periolov, and she didn't find, when she's changing the bed, she didn't find any Keri, she didn't find any Shifat Zera on it. Which even, well, the point is, in other words, first of all, it does sometimes happen that people have that at night, but in particular, when a person is traveling, it's more likely to make it, it makes that more likely, and still there wasn't. So she knew from that that he's an Isha the Kim Kaddish. It doesn't say, but whatever, it was a mature man. It's him, and she made the bed. She made his bed with linen sheets for Lairos to carry all of it. She didn't get any carry on it, even though, again, traveling tends to do that to a person. So therefore, so she realized that he's Kaddish. Okay. When he says Kaddish who, she says he is Kaddish, implying as opposed to somebody else. What she meant to imply by that, who Kaddish and Meshor say ain't Kaddish. He is a holy man, Elisha, but his Meshor, his attendant, Yechazi, is not so holy. And we find an example where we see that Gehazi was not quite so holy. Now later on he went completely off the derech, but that was later on. But even earlier on, like she saw the beginning of it. Maybe she did see flies by his table or carry on his bed. I don't know, but whatever. But the point is, later on you have later in the story after her child dies, she's rushing to the Navi to ask him to be Mechayim Mesim. And the Pasuk says that she comes to Har HaKarmel, which is where Elisha was, and she fell down by his feet, by Yigash Gehazi Lahodfa. The Pasuk says Gehazi came close to push her away. And so what does that mean? Lahodfa, Amar Rabbi Yisrael Chanina, she'achza b'hoid yafya. Means he grabbed her by hoid yafya. Hoid yafya, Rashi explains, means by her breast. So the fact that he would do that shows that he's definitely not an Ish Kodesh. Actually, you have the Sodik HaKoyim says, you know, we're not talking about deliberately he goes to reach for that part of her body. I mean, come on, you know, then you don't just call him not Kaddish, then you call him an out-and-out Russia. It means, you know, he's trying to grab the nearest thing in order to push her away, and he happened to grab that. But still, you know, if he was really a Kaddish, then he wouldn't have accidentally grabbed for that. And Ben Yoyada, anyway, has a different explanation. He says, hoid yopya means her face. Because she was lying on the ground there by Elisha's feet, so he's trying to pick her up. But still, it's not a sneeristic thing to do. The pasuk continues that it goes back to the beginning of the story. The Isha Shonamis tells her husband that this Isha Lekim Kodesh over Olenu Tomid, he's constantly passing by us. Now, the word Tomid usually means something that happens daily, like the Korban Tomid, or weekly, or whatever, but here, it's not. There's no particular schedule. Whenever Elisha came to Shonim, he'd stay by them. So what's the Tomid? It means, when a person has a Kamar Chacham as a guest in his house, and he gives him Hanah from his Bechasim, like over here, where they made a room for him, and then gave him to eat and drink. The Pasuk considers it equal to as if he brought a Korban Tomid. So therefore, the word Tomid in this Pasuk doesn't mean how often Elisha passes by. It means that the result of this is that they have this host as if they brought a Korban Tomid. To have a tzaddik hosted in their house and then feed him and give him anah. Speaking of, since we're mentioning Rabbi Yosef HaChanina in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so here's another din, and this also gets us back to the din of davening that we were talking about before. Al yamid under mamakam gavoya b'yispalel, a person should not stand on a high place in daven. El mamakam nomu b'yispalel, a person should stand on a low place in daven. Shinem mamakim klasicha Hashem, as the Pasuk says, I call out to you from the depth of Hashem. In fact, there used to be a minhag in shul that the chazan would stand in a place lower than everybody else, because of this clause, and in fact, you have for that reason throughout Shas, when a person is davening by the Omer, it's called Yored Lifnei HaTeva. He goes down before the Teva because it was literally down.
You said Shul has to be higher
than others. Either the building itself should be higher, but the building itself should be higher. Within the Shul itself, you're davening in the indeed, we learn like that in a braisa. A person should not stand when he's davening, and davening as usual in the Gemara means specifically Trinas, right? Not on a chair, not on a stool, or on a high place, but a person should stand on a low place, because there's no pride, there's no greatness in front of Hashem. When you're standing in front of Hashem, you should be humble. And you also have a pasuk by the poor person when he's faint. So we see also that the person should be like a poor person, acting like a poor person where he doesn't stand on something high. Now, in Shulchan Aruch, it says that there's a number of caveats to this. If the place that you're standing on, for example, we see sometimes in many shuls, the bima is higher, and some people daven on the bima. So what is it? Not on the bima itself, but whatever, on the steps, on the platform by the bima or whatever. So one thing is, if the area you're standing on is 4x4 amas, then it's fine, because then it's a rishus of its own. If it has walls or a partition around it, as bimas usually do, then also, same thing, then it's also okay. The main point is over here that when it's none of the above, and also we're mentioning standing on a chair or a stool because those are unsteady, and therefore you're likely you're afraid to fall, and therefore you're not going to concentrate on trying to answer it. But if it's 4x4 amos or it's got walls around it, then it's fine.
What about the women who dive it on a second floor?
That's 4x4 amos. The second
floor.
Yeah, the second the Ezra's Nushim is as well more than 4x4 amos in size. Yeah. So that's fine. Then it's a rishus lam. It's the same thing. I mean, you can also daven on the second floor of a house. You know, same idea. Okay. Fine. But Rabbi Yosi Rav Chanina Mishum Rav Elazar Yaakov. I'm a spalo. When a person is davening Shmona Esrei, Tzarich Shechaven Etz Raglav. You have to keep his feet one next to the other. Shenemu V'Raglei Hebrego Yeshara, because the pasuk says about the Malachim that Yechezkel saw their feet in plural was a straight foot. So in other words, they kept their feet together out of a sense of bittul in front of Hashem. So the same thing, we should have the same sense of bittul in front of Hashem.
Who did that?
The Malachim, it says they're standing. Well, so yeah, so the pasuk describes metaphorically how they're like human beings with wings or whatever, but the pasuk describes they have a straight foot. So okay, the Forsham on the pasuk explain over there, it means straight in the sense that they don't have knees because they don't have to sit, so therefore their feet are just straight. But we also see from that they keep their feet together, and therefore we should do the same thing. One idea that the Maharal writes is that way we show in front of Hashem like we're not even able to move without Hashem making it possible. Okay. What does it mean in the pasuk? You should not eat on the blood. Now there are actually many meanings in that pasuk. The Gemara in Sanhedrin explains that there are about half a dozen dinim that are learned from that pasuk. We learn from that you can't eat the blood of a korban before the blood is sprinkled. We learn from that it's an issur for the ben sotah remora. Don't eat the kind of eating that eventually is going to lead to bloodshed. There's a few other things. Lois al-Adam, on the board. But we're also dashing. So what does it mean? You shouldn't eat before you daven for your blood. In other words, you're davening Hashem for life and health and so forth. So you shouldn't be eating, lois soichu, you shouldn't be eating al-Adam on, meaning ahead of that.
The general meaning is what?
The general lois soichu al-Adam literally means don't eat on the blood. So the Forshim explain over there that one thing the Forshim say over there, there used to be a pagan ritual in those times that they would shech and eat with the blood right next to them, and that way in order to attract shadim so they could use them for kishur for whatever. So the Torah bans that. But aside from that, as I said, the Gemara mentioned a half dozen mitzvahs that we learned from that. Although the Sanhedrin is not allowed to eat on the day that they sentence somebody to death. There's another one. There's a few of them. But one of them is our din over here that a person is not supposed to daven before he's not supposed to eat before he daven. Ikadamri, Hold on. Ikadamri, another version. A person who eats and drinks and only then davens. All of Akosov Omer about such a person. The pasuk says, you have thrown me, Hashem says, behind your back. So you can read, not gevecha, your back, but ge'echa gavecha, whatever. Altikri gavecha, not don't read your back, ela ge'echa, but your pride. I mean, Omer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem is, so to speak, saying, la'acha should just go there after this person is acting so proudly, because eating and drinking, we find throughout Tanakh, when a person is full, then it tends to make them feel prouder. Now, kibbalot of Malchus Shemayim, now he wants to accept on himself Malchus Shemayim, it doesn't work. Now, what's the actual deal? What are you asking? Does it mean anything? So first of all, the post can say it doesn't include, for example, drinking water. Because drinking water, you can't say is dead of gales. You can't say a person is not going to feel a sense of pride after drinking water. So the later post can extend it to, by the same thing, drinks that are basically based on water, like tea or coffee or whatever, are not such an issue before davening. Well, there's a little hana, but it doesn't. Yeah, but it's not going to make a person so proud. I mean, it's true. We're going to learn later in the Masechta that there's a difference between water and other drinks as far as the bracha, but as far as when you make a bracha, and it's true. Other drinks, you always make a bracha because you always enjoy the flavor, water only if you're thirsty, granted. But nevertheless, the fact remains that those kind of drinks are not the kind that are going to lead a person to gaiva, and therefore they're not incompatible with doing before being makabel omar. No, wine definitely not. In fact, there are some of the Rishonim who said the Gemara is specifically limiting itself to the kind of drinks that will make a person drunk, like wine. Anyway, but the any kind of a person eats it. One time. So now there are other details in it. For example, so we have in Hayom Yom, the famous story over there about Rebbe and Rivka, that the wife of the Rebbe Maharash, that when she that at one point she was sick. And the doctors told her she needs to eat early in the morning. So she would daven and then eat. And it's an ascetic. Her father-in-law tells her, don't do that. It's better to eat in order to daven than to daven in order to eat. So based on that and similar things you have in halacha. If a person is just not able to function and not able to concentrate without having something to eat beforehand, then fine. Don't sit down for a whole meal. But yeah, you can have some mezona, some coffee or whatever. So it all depends really what the person's attitude is. It all depends. Yeah, are we talking about this? So again, are we talking about the person wants to eat? I want to fill myself up, and only then I'll get around to davening. Then it's no good. But if the person is doing it because in order to be able to concentrate better on davening, then yeah. Okay. We said in the Mishnah, Rabbi Yeshua says that you have until 3 hours in the day to say Shema. The halacha is like it, and that's where we get the third man kriyishma that we find on calendars. You have a machlokas with a poskim. Shows money, that's right. So you have a machlokas with a poskim, you have a machlokas between the Magen Avraham on the one side and the Vilna Gaon and the Alter Rebbe on the other side. Whether you count malos, whether the 12 hours are counted from alos hashachar to tekeh kachavim, which would fit better with what we said at the beginning of the Masechta, that from alos hashachar until tekeh is all considered daytime. Or do you consider it from Netzachama until Shkia, which is how the Vilna Gaon and the Alter Rebbe hold? So that results in two different possible times for Sosman Krishma, and on many calendars you can find both of them listed.
So most poskim go by...
I wouldn't say most poskim, but you have some poskim. So some poskim go by the Magen Avraham, some go by the Vilna Gaon and the Alter Rebbe. So
Magen Avraham says what?
The Magen Avraham says you go from Alos Hashacha till Faith. So his Sosman Krishma comes out earlier than the Alter Rebbe's and the Vilna Gaon. And then you have, yeah.
He's the only one who did that?
He's among the Akron. Yeah,
Dalos to say
so. Okay. All right. We said in the Mishnah.
All the other ones.
Yeah, two other ones. Yeah, there's only going on the Alphabet. I don't know what different other posts can say. Okay. We said if a person says Shema any later than that, he hasn't lost. So what does that mean, he hasn't lost? It means he doesn't have the schus of saying Shema in its time, as the Gemara is going to say at the end. But what does it mean? Omer of Chista, Omer of Ufa, Ovovad Shlo Yema Yoser. However, if he's saying Shema any later than the time, any later than Sev Shema Kirishma, he cannot say the Bracha Yoser. Actually, that means both Brachas that we say before Shema, Yoser and Avatolam. Because after that, it's too late to say those brachas. It would be a bracha of Atmala.
So we had rushed in until what? 8 o'clock?
So until, well, no, it depends on what time during the year. According to these days, the Alter Rebbe's Shita, which is what we follow, has first month Krishna at 9 something, 9:39 today, for example.
Sometimes
Nets is 7-18 today. So you count
7-5
approximately. So you divide that, and so you divide that into 12, and then take three of those. Yeah. So yeah, that's different times of the year. Some different times of the year, it comes out between about 9 and 10 o'clock. So Rav Chista is saying that you can't say the brachas if you're saying Shema any later than 3 hours. And most of the makes you have a contradiction. A brisa says, if a person says Shema any later than that, he hasn't lost out. Like it said in the Mishnah, he's like somebody who's saying words of Torah, so that's fine. But it's not like regular learning Torah in the sense that he can still say the two brachas before it and one after it. So there's a clear contradiction on Rav Chista. You're right, Q-Ufter, that's a contradiction. So we don't go like what Rav Chista said.
So according to Rav Chista, he could make the bracha.
No, according to Rav Chista, he couldn't, but he's contradicted by the Braisa, and if we could. Ikadamri, another version goes of the whole discussion, Omer Rav Chista, Omer Ma'okva, my Lo Hifstid. The second version is Rav Chista is in fact saying the other way around. What is Lo Hifstid? What does it mean? He didn't lose. It means Shalo Hifstid bracha. It means that he didn't lose out, he can still say the bracha. And in fact, Tani Nami Hochi, indeed, we learn like that in the Braisa, Akur Makamba Elif Lahifsit, Kodim Shkor Vatura, Avon Vorku Shtaim Lakoneva Akis Lakore. Now, so the question is there a deadline for that? Do we say, fine, so a person, we're saying a person can say the brachas of Shema and Shema later on, how later is later? So the Rambam actually holds it means all day. Most of the other poskim disagree with the Rambam, and they say it means you have maybe until 4 hours of the day, which is Sof Zman Tefillah, which is an hour, Shoz Manus later than Sof Zman Kriya Shema. You have maybe Tzol Chatzoi, but not any later than that. The halacha in Shulchan Aruch is paskin, and Shulchan Aruch brings both opinions, that you can only say the brachas until 4 hours in the day, and Yesh Omrim, being the Rambam, that you can do it all day. And then Shulchan Aruch says that that's whatever writes, that the first opinion is the more preferable one.
So that after
4 hours in the day, you shouldn't be saying the brachas. Amr of Mani. So 3 hours of the day is the time for Kriya Shema. Person does it during that time, he has a mitzvah of Kriya Shema in its time. That's what I was going to say.
Up to the end of the third hour.
Mind you, by the way, you have Rishonim who learned that Shalosh Shoyot means the beginning of the third hour. However, the consensus of the other postum is not like them, and therefore it's the end of the third hour. So the end of the third hour, which again, according to the end of the third, beginning of the fourth, right? So you have until then, you say Shema, then you've been yoked to the mitzvah in the proper way. After that, you have another hour during which you can also say Shema with the brachas. After that already, it's only Kekorah Vatorah, so you have the mitzvah of saying Shema, but not the mitzvah of saying it in time. And according to what the person was saying, you really shouldn't be saying the brachas at that point. Okay. So Rabbani says, by the way, you can see from this that somebody who says Shema in its proper time is greater than somebody who learns Torah. Because the Mishnah is saying a person who says Shema any later than that, he hasn't lost out. He's like a person reading Torah. So we see that saying Shema in the proper time is the more preferable thing. They're saying it after the proper time is only Kikorda Batorah. Like he gets downgrading the level, kind of. So you see it. Saying Shema Bainasa is an important thing. That's very nice, but nevertheless, when it comes to saying Shema at a time, the fact is, Talmud Torah is a very important thing, but Kriya Shema is Kabbalah's Ol Malchus Shemayim, and that's an essential prerequisite for learning Torah.
Why do we know that we have to say Kriya Shema?
Because the Pasuk says,
and
the Vidibat
Abam
means these words, Shema. Yeah.
Nothing else?
Yeah. Mishnah says, well, I mean, it also, Vidibat Abam means Torah in general, but specifically refers to Kriya Shema. Okay. But Shema Omen. But Erev Kol Adam Yasa V'Yikra. In the evening, when a person is saying Shema, meaning at night, when a person is saying Shema, he should Yasa and read. Yasa, Rashi explains, means he should lean on his side. He should lean on his side. Now, we're going to say in the next parak, actually, that it's disrespectful to say Shema laying down, unless a person has no choice. So one possibility is that it doesn't mean completely lying on his side. It means like propping himself up on an elbow or something. And another possibility is that it means reclining. I know some of the Rishonim say, Rashi over here says it means al-tido. Some of the Rishonim say that it means reclining on his side, reclining like the way a person does when he eats, for example, a zebra. Anyway, but Shammai says you should do that. Or Babroto Yamod, in the morning when a person says Shema, you should stand up. Shema was shocked the whole Kumacha. So the prophet says, when you lie down, when you get up. And the Shammai is taking that to mean not just the time, but also the actual position, the actual position a person should be in. Obisolim, and the soul says no, kolodim perikadarkai. Any person, a person can say Shema in whatever posture he wants, within reason. Again, we're going to learn later on on Daf Yudalef, there are certain positions that are disrespectful to do it in, but a person can do it in the normal position they were in. Shenem over lach lechavaderech, because the pasuk also continues that you say it when you're walking on the road. So in other words, you're not limited to a certain posture. Im kein lama memo v'shach b'chol kumecha. So Basilel says in that case, why does it say v'shach b'chol kumecha, which you b'shamay are taking to mean the actual posture? It means v'shach b'nei adam sheichim, v'shach b'nei adam oimim. It means you say Shema when people are going to sleep or are asleep and when people are getting up. Omer of Typhon, Ani Hayiti Baba Derech. So the Typhon says one. We'll see in the Gemara. There's more to it. Yeah, they have to realize that's always how it is. In general, when the Mishnah presents us a discussion between one Tana and another, in this case between a group of Tanaim and another, we'll often find in the Gemara that there's more to the discussion that is recorded in Brisus, but we don't have in the Mishnah. So Rav Tarfin says, one time I was on the road traveling, the Tasi Likris Kediva Beit Shammai, and I leaned or laid down or whatever to say Shema like Beit Shammai says. The Sikanti Ba'asmim now list them, and then I was putting myself in danger because of bandits, because the roads are full of bandits, and then I was taking extra time to say Shema, and I was putting myself in danger. He doesn't necessarily mean that he was actually attacked by bandits. No. He just means that. Omrulai, so the Chacham told him, you did wrong. Kedai ha'yisa locho v'asmecha. You would have deserved to be responsible for yourself. In other words, if you had been killed or injured or whatever, you would have been responsible for it because you did the wrong thing. Yeah, I've been asked. She'avarta al divrei Beis Hillel, because you violated what Beis Hillel says, because Beis Hillel says that you can say Shema in any posture, and you're doubtful doing like this Shema. And as I was going to point out, you're not supposed to do that. There is, by the way, an interesting, now, the Gemara is going to point out, actually, it's not like the Sibyl was saying you're not allowed to do that, but nevertheless, still, he was deliberately doing like the Shammai. No, it's like, the point is, I'm not telling him the very fact that you were over al divrei Beis Hillel, so we're going to see in the Gemara, how is he over al divrei Beis Hillel? The Sibyl doesn't say you can't lay to say Shema, they just say you don't have to, so we'll see in the Gemara. Okay, so the Gemara starts up. The Shlema Beis Hillel come afar, she time I over time of the Beis Shammai. This tool we can understand. They explain their reasoning, and they explain the reasoning of Beit Shammai. They say their reasoning, therefore that means you can say it in any posture you want. And they're explaining what Beit Shammai is saying, that you were thinking that Meshach HaFol Kamecha means a position, and we're telling you that it means just the night and the day. But why doesn't Beit Shammai agree with Beit Shammai? Why do they insist that it means the posture? Amulach Beit Shammai. So Beit Shammai can answer you, Im Kane, if that's all it meant, the pasuk is telling you, you have to say Shema at night, and you have to say it in the day, name a krabab boiker or ba'erev. And the pasuk, let the pasuk say, v'dibar tabamba boiker or ba'erev. You should say them in the morning or in the evening. Ba'erev ba'boiker, whatever. My b'shoch b'chol kumecha. Why instead does it say, by the way, there is a good deal of discussion here among the Mechorshim. Well, you do have actually a good deal of discussion here among the Mechorshim. We actually talked about the other day that this fundamental, one fundamental meaning of Erev actually is the afternoon. So the truth is, if it's said of Aboko or Erev, that could be misleading. You could think it means that you should say Shema in the afternoon. So, okay, you have some of the Mechorshim over here. Tlach, for example, talks about it. Others that maybe the Gemara is saying it should have said by Yom of Alayra. But it didn't have to say specifically v'shach b'chol kumecha. My v'shach b'chol kumecha. Therefore, Beit Shammai says, when it says v'shach b'chol kumecha, means v'shach shchiva mamash. We agree, of course, that it means a time of day. It means a time when people are lying down to sleep. But it also means at that time you should be lying down. Or v'shach kima mamash. And when you get up with kumecha, means not only in the morning, it means also literally you're getting up and standing up. Okay. So the question, so that's Beit Shammai's explanation. Okay, so the question is, Beit Shammai, hi, uvalach l'chavaderech, my olamu. Fine, what does Beit Shammai do with uvalach l'chavaderech? Beis Hillel is using it to say that because it says uvalach l'chavaderech, then it means you're not limited to any one posture. What is Beit Shammai doing with that? And by the way, that we're going to talk about in the next paragraph. The halacha is you are able to say Shema while you're walking, however you have to stop for part of it. How much? We'll see in the Gemara over there, but you do have to stop for part of it in order to actually have kavana and accept Malchus Shemayim. Okay. So what is Beit Shammai doing with the Velach Chabaderech? The answer is, Ahum Iboi Lohu L'chedetanya. They use that for a whole different drasha. We learn in a braisa, the Pasuk says, V'shiv T'chabaveisecha, you have to say Shema when you're sitting at home, means, Nichnas la'osik ba'mitzvah. That means as opposed to somebody who is engaged in doing a mitzvah, where then he's potter from other mitzvahs. There's a lot of discussion when exactly that is, because we don't say, for example, a person is wearing tzitzit elsewhere at, in sukkah, for example, you don't say while a person is wearing tzitzit, they're not davening. So obviously there are limits to oisik ba'mitzvah potter. No, what do you mean? When you wear tiles, you do wear tefillin.
That's the point.
Yeah, so.
Can I say there's one mitzvah?
Right, so, right. So what is, yeah. So Tosfos and the Ran and many other Rishonim discuss various ins and outs of it. It can mean when one of them, when you're actually involved in getting ready to do one of them, as opposed to you actually in the process already of doing it, for example, putting on tefillin versus having them on. It can be a difference of, is the one mitzvah interfering with the other one? For example, over here, for example, in Sukkah, the talks about, let's say, for example, a person is a shliach mitzvah, he's on the road to collect tzedakah or whatever it is, and then if he has to make a sukkah and sit in it, then it's going to delay his trip. So then he has a tour of it, as opposed to, for example, saying wearing tefillin doesn't prevent a person from saying shema and davening.
So mitzvahs have the same goal, and it's fine.
So it's not so much if they have the same goal, it's more if one of them does not interfere with doing the other, right? Okay. So b'shiv t'chavah etzach, prap l'oisik b'mitzvah, overlach t'chavah derech, prap l'chosen. When the pasuk continues, when you walk on the road, that means as opposed to a chosen. A chosen who's just gotten married is potter from shema. We'll actually see the details about it in the next paragraph. We'll talk about the detailed dinim of that, but right now, let's see.
Potter going on the road?
No. So, it's considered he's going on the road. Now, okay. Well, the idea is, in other words, the word derech is sometimes used in Tanakh as a euphemism for having relations. But Rashi points out over here, the chosin himself, of course, is an osik mitzvah, but the fact of the matter is, we would have thought that, like this, when you have a regular osik mitzvah, a person is, let's say, on the road to collect tzedakah or pidyon shvuyim or what have you, so then if he has to do a different mitzvah, there's going to be tirda. He's going to get distracted from his main goal. But over here, you would argue, a chosin, sure, there's tirda. Sure, he's preoccupied with the be'ilah mitzvah that he's soon going to do. But, Rashi says, you would think that maybe that's not considered the kind of tirda, maybe it's just a tirda in his mind. The point is not that it tires him. The point is, in other words, it's one thing, again, let's say you have a person who's traveling to collect tzedakah. If he would have to stop in a sukkah, then it would take him out of the way, so that actually prevents him from doing the mitzvah. But over here, it's only a thing of machshava. So if it weren't for the words of Alakta Chabaderech, you wouldn't know that a chosin is possible. The point is that he's taught, nevertheless, Mikana Amru, Akonis is a Bsula Potter, based on this, the Chachamim said that a Chosin who's marrying a Bsula is Potter, because then he's thinking about the Be'ilas Mitzvah that he's going to do.
One second.
But if he's marrying an Almona who's already had relations, then he's Chayev and Shema, because then the distraction that he has is not considered great enough to Potter him from the Mitzvah.
So in the words, means even if you have relations, you have to say it, but we, the Rabbanon, we miss Takana that you don't.
No. It means the Torah itself is pattering. It means B'shiv T'chav V'Secha is pattering any Oisik mitzvah, where saying Shema would actually prevent him from accomplishing what he needs to, because he's busy with something else. Then Uvalak T'chav Aderach teaches us, even when it's not something where it's going to prevent him in Maiseh, where it's just going to be just distracted from Machshava, and therefore he can't concentrate, for example, the chosin who is distracted because of the machshava of the ilas mitzvah, then he's also potter. Now, so why the difference between psula and almana? The Rambam gives a reason, because in the case of psula, a good part of his distraction, a good part of his machshava is she going to be a psula? Which is a matter of some concern. So therefore, that kind of thing is enough to potter him from the back. Not to make him forget. It's enough to make it that therefore when he says Shema, he's not going to be able to have full kavana, and therefore the Torah passes him from it. So the question is, my mashma, where do you see from the word of Lassa Chabaderech that it has anything to do with Krishna? Or not that it has to do with Krishna, it's in the positive about Krishna. But where do we see that from that we see Osef and Mitzvah? The question is actually on both B'shiv T'chav V'Esech or Lach T'chav Aderech. Where does B'shiv T'chav V'Esech mean? When you sit in your house, what does that have anything to do with the Oisik Mitzvah? Amar Papa Ki Derech. What it is the Pasuk is drawing a comparison with going on the road. Ma Derech Rishus, when a person goes on the road, it's an optional thing. There's no mitzvah to go on the road. Akol Rishus, the same way the Pasuk is implying, only when you're engaged in Divrei HaRishus are you obligated in Shema, but not when you're Oisik
Mitzvah. But he said going on the road to traveling?
Traveling, yeah. traveling, walking, whatever. The question is, the Gemara says, why? Mila eskin into kaz all the time mitzvah. Why? The word derech might mean a person is going on a journey for a mitzvah. But after the hachi amar achman alikri, and still the pasuk is saying he has to say shema. So maybe there is no ptur for maybe there is ptur for oisik the mitzvah. The answer is, and came lichda achman b'sheves uvalecha. Fine, but in that case, the Torah could have just written b'sheves in sitting in the house uvalecha and in going on the road. My b'shiv techa uvalecha techa. Why does it have the possessive on it? You're going and you're sitting and you're going. It means the shevet sidach of alecha sidach of the machayves. Only when you're sitting in the house or going on your own, or only when you're sitting or you're going as your own, in other words, not for a bar mitzvah, only then are you chayv hod the mitzvah kiras. But if it's not your going and you're sitting, if it's because of a higher thing, because Hashem told you to do that, then you're potter. That's the implication. Okay. So the question is, so the question is, so the question is, in that case, when he's going to be marrying an almana, he's also getting ready to do a mitzvah. There's also a mitzvah to do the be'ilas mitzvah with her. So why don't we say then that his kirda, that his mental distraction, is enough to pastor him from Shema then? The answer is, well, actually no. What the Gemara is asking is, the Gemara at this point is assuming it's not a matter of distraction. There is a kasu that any time a person is oisik from mitzvah, he's potter from mitzvah, even if it's not going to prevent him. So the question is, then why not if he marries an almana? The answer is because there is, we do have to consider the matter of pirda. We do have to consider the matter of distraction. I tarred, but I lay tarred. A man who's marrying a basula is more tarred, he's more preoccupied with the be'ilas mitzvah that's yet to come to make sure that he does it properly and breaks the basulim, to make sure that she is a basula, etc. As opposed to with an almana, you don't have that. Okay. So the question is, actually, and in the back of the Gemara and then Midrash have a different explanation of what the Tirda is with the Basula. He's concerned that he may become a cruel shofar. He's concerned that he may not do the act properly and it'll injure him. As opposed to with an Amana, she's already more experienced and looser, and therefore there's less an issue. Okay, so if you're going to say that it's a matter of tirda, imishum tirda, if you're going to say that it's a matter of mental distraction, then it shouldn't just be when he's oisik a mitzvah. You should say the same thing. A person had a ship that sank in the ocean and lost a fortune. He's also distracted. He also can't concentrate. Why is he not potter from Shema then? So you might say, okay, maybe he is potter from Shema in that case. Can't. Why then would we find that Rav Abba bar Zavda says in the name of Rav, Ovo chai b'chol mitzvah samuris b'tor l'chutz min atfilin, and Ovo, even though an Avelos is definitely a mitzvah, more so than mourning for his sunk ship, and nevertheless, an Ovo is chai in all mitzvahs that it says in the Torah, including Shema, chutz min atfilin, except for tefillin, try to never be... So he has to take Krishna. Chutzman has tefillin, except for tefillin. Shani nema be'em pe'er. Tefillin in the pasuk in Yechezkel are called pe'er. They're called glory. Shani nema pe'er chavoy shalacha. Hashem tells Yechezkel that his wife is going to pass away, and he shouldn't keep most of the dinim of avelos as a sign for the Jewish people. Anyway, so Hashem tells him you should wear your pe'er, implying that usually an oval does not wear his pe'er. Yeah, pe'er means tefillin. And why shouldn't an oval be wearing tefillin? Rashi says because like an oval is like rolling around in the dust because of its tzar, so therefore tefillin is an inappropriate thing for him to wear. Anyway, the point is that so an oval is possible from tefillin. Now halacha is that's actually only on the first day of Avelos. So then, right. So primarily what it is before the burial. I think the way we do it nowadays is after the burial, if there's still time in the day, then the guy puts on tefillin. Anyway, the point is that we see from that even an oval who's distracted with mourning over his relative, yes, is still chayav in Shema. So the same thing, all the more so applies to somebody whose ship sank or whatever. So why are we saying it's a matter of tirda? The answer is because not just any kind of tirda. Hossam toted tirda de mitzvah. Because the difference is when it comes to an oval, his distraction has to do with a mitzvah. There is a mitzvah of avelos after all. Hocha toted tirda de rishus. As opposed to his ship sank, sure, he's bothered by it, and any person would be. But it's only a tirda of rishus. He's not obligated in halacha to be sad about it. So therefore, there's no protein.
Since it's a rishus, you should have kriyat shema. And
that's the point. In other words, what we're saying is the Torah is giving a ptur for two different pturim like this. One is oisik mitzvah, where saying shema will actually stand in the way of him doing whatever other mitzvah he's doing. The other one, for example, let's say we're going to have it, we're going to have later on, for example, when they were Osif be'ibur shana, when the Chachamim were involved in figuring out the calculations, they need to figure out whether it's a leap year or not. They can't get distracted from that by anything else, so then they're potter from Shema during that time. So that would be an example of Osif be'mitzvah. Then we're left to Chabaderef. We're learning even when Shema is not going to prevent him from doing the mitzvah, however, he's having tirda de mitzvah. He's right now distracted and preoccupied with something that is a mitzvah. Then he's also potter from Shema. So again, the guy who's marrying the Basula has a tirda de mitzvah. I said it wrong. Chosim tirda de mitzvah is talking about the chosim. Hocha tirda tirda de rishus. It's not just about the ship sinking, but even about the oval. Even the oval, tirda is considered a tirda de rishus. Right. Yes, he has to prava avelus. But with how much he feels distracted and how sad he feels is a subjective matter. So therefore, the pter.
To be
an oval. No, it's not Rishus to be an oval, but it's Rishus. How much that's going to distract him, how much that's going to preoccupy him, it may or may not. So therefore, we don't have the Ptur relative to a Chosin who's getting ready for the Ilas Mitzvah, then it's considered a Ptur to do Rishus.
What happens if he travels to reach his Makom Avelus, if his father, his mother, or...
We'll talk about such things in Moed Karton. That's not in the place. Okay. You have different dinim over there when he's considered an oval, why not? Okay.
No, when does he have to say first Shema? Someone who's on the
way. Again, we're saying over here, when he's going on the way, we're saying in and of itself. I understand. So the question, so that's Oisik B'mitzvah. So you could say that's Oisik B'mitzvah. First of all, these dinim about when a person is potter from Shema, we're going to learn in the next paragraph. In general, it doesn't apply nowadays because most people don't have that level of kavana anyway. So even a chosin, when he's getting ready to get married, is still chayav in Shema because we don't say most people don't have that level of kavana that a person should be able to say, now I can't. But even in those times, you would say, okay, well, that's a chavaderach, okay, but is he able to say Shema on the way? If he's able to, then he's able to. If he's not, now. Okay. All right. Obes Shammai. So now, what does Bes Shammai say to all of this? So we've just had the explanation of what we're learning from B'shiv to Chol B'Vesach, or the Lech B'Chabadera. So the question is, what is Bet Shammai learning from the Lech B'Chabadera? Actually, our goes Habak changes it. The question is not really on Bet Shammai. The question is really on Bet Hillel. Once it says B'shiv to Chol B'Vesach, then why does it need to say the Lech B'Chabadera? Anyway, the answer is, they would say you need that for shluchei mitzvah. The very fact that shluchei mitzvah are potter, you learn from that. Or b'silul amri, b'silul will answer. Memela shmamina. Okay, but if you say that shluchei mitzvah are potter, shmamina, we see from that afilu b'derech nami kari. Nu, and you see from that normally on the road you do have to say shma, because only shluchei mitzvah are potter. The implication is that were it not for the fact that you're going on a mitzvah, you would be chayev. Because you're going on a mitzvah, therefore you're potter. So the implication is you can be saying Shema while you're on the road, and therefore that goes back to what the Sivol said in the Mishnah. You don't have to be in any particular posture to say Shema. Okay. We said in the... Okay. Tanan Rabbanan. We learned in the Brice. They're talking about this question of what position do you have to be in when you say Shema. Tanan Rabbanan. Besilul oimnim makorin, yoshvin makorin, or matin... Besilul oimnim makorin. A person can stand when he says Shema. Yoshman Makoran, he can also sit when he says Shema, or Matin Makoran, he can be leaning over when he says Shema, Hochan Maderach Makoran, and you can be walking on the road and saying Shema, Osin Mimalachan Makoran, you can even be doing work while you're saying Shema. Again, in the next paragraph, we're going to have a little caveat on that it doesn't apply to the entire Shema, only it applies to most of it, but not to the first Pasuk, or Nanjal Al Labach, or whatever, we'll get to that. Okay.
All of this doesn't apply to first Pasuk?
All of these things, these things about walking or doing malacha don't apply to the first pasuk. The first pasuk, you can't be walking and you can't be doing malacha, right? Ideally, actually, it says in Shulchan Aruch, not the first parish, right? Okay. Umayse Rabbi Shmuel v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, shayim subin v'makom echad. It happened once that Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we're reclining to eat in a certain place. V'hoi Rabbi Shmuel muta v'Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah zokuf. Rabbi Shmuel was leaning over. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was sitting straight. Ending. Kiven she gives man krishma. Then when came the time for shema, she stood up. Elazar was zokuf for Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Elazar lay down, and Rabbi Shmuel did just the opposite. He stood up. Amalei Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah the Mishmal. He says Yishmal achi emshal lachol mashal amad davadema. Let me draw an analogy. What you just did, that all this time you were leaning, you were reclining, and now dafka you're getting up to say shema. Let me give you an illustration. What that's like. Mashal echad sha'omrim la mashal echad sha'omrim la kancha megudol. It's like a person where people tell him your beard is very nice and long. And he answers them like, huh, because you praised it, then therefore it's going to be given over to the destroyers. I'm going to go and bring scissors or a razor and destroy it. And it's like, you're complimenting me for it, so therefore just the, no, not Ayin Hara, but you're complimenting me for it, so therefore that's I'm going to remove it. The Aruch actually has a different explanation. Well, whatever it is, the point is, it's like a marshal, it's an illustration to prove the point. So the same way, Rabbi Elazar says to Rabbi Shmuel, what are you doing over here? Kol zman shani zokuf atam muta. The whole time I'm standing or sitting up straight, you're leaning over. Achshav shani tasi. Now when I'm dafka leaning down to say Shema, after the kafta, you're dafka halacha standing up. What's going on? The Aruch, by the way, has a different explanation of this yir keneged hamashchisim, that what it means is they tell the person you have a very nice beard, and he says, good, then he says you should know. The reason why I'm growing it is achsalach. Yir keneged hamashchisim, I'm doing it just to go against the people who shave their beard.
You're not allowed to do that.
No, therefore you grow a beard, because the Torah tells you to. But the point is, in other words, like, normally a person would grow a beard because he himself wants a beard, or because the Torah says he has to, or whatever. But imagine a person who says, the only reason I'm growing a beard is achsalachos, just to be different than everybody else.
Couldn't it be considered kira in a way?
I don't know. Whatever. The point is, he's using it as a metaphor, like the same thing. Why are you dafka doing the opposite? Amaloi, said Rabbi Shmuel, answers, because just the opposite. I'm doing the right thing. I'm following Basilo, who says that you shouldn't be, this is talking about Shema at night, you should, Basilo said in the Mishnah that you can read in any position, so you don't be laying down. So you're dafka laying down like the Shammai, so I'm doing rather like Basilo. The loy oid, and not only that, Ela Shema Yiru HaTamidim V'yikvur HaLocha L'Durs. If people see, if the Talmidim see that you are laying down to say Shema, and I don't do the opposite, then the people are going to think that the halacha is like the Shema. So the Gemara says, my v'loy oid, why does he have to add the second point? The first point should be enough. The Shema said you have to lean, the civil said you. The answer is v'chitema, because what Rabbi Shmuel means is, you could argue back, you could say, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah could have argued back. You're saying that I'm acting like the Shammai, that I'm not to lay down. Fine, but Basil doesn't say you can't lay down. Basil nami islahu matin. Basil agrees that you could be lying down,
but you don't do it.
Yeah, but that's why the second thing. Animila demarke va'asana ikra. So Rabbi Shmuel is implicitly saying that's true if you're already lying down. Aval hacha kiven da adhashta havesa zokul. But here, since up until now you, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, was standing. The hashka muta, and now you're laying down. Amri, people are going to say, Shema minak the shamay tzvilu. Oh, that means the chacham hold like the shamay. Shema yiru atamid of yikvu alacha l'deris. So therefore, he's saying, in other words, that's why you're thinking I just did it after lachos. I did it first of all because this hillel was saying that because you are doing like the shamay, so I'm not. And number two, even if you're going to argue that the Silla wouldn't, in principle, have a problem with laying down, but here they would. But here the problem is that people are going to mistake when they think the halacha like the shamay. So in fact, you have something, I think it says in I don't remember where this comes from, Sibyl Sushoto maybe or something, but sometimes you have. It's very nice to be a chassid, it's very nice to go listen to Meshulat Adin, but you always have to consider the effect it's going to have on other people, and you also have to consider when in this case you had a machloikas, the Shammai, the Sibyl, and the Chacham are trying to resolve it and set aside the machloikas and decide the halacha according to one way, so then it's inappropriate to act in a way that people are going to think the machloikas is still on them.
And the
other way. Yeah. So Rabbi Yechezkel taught a braisa as follows. Also kediva b'shamay, also kediva b'tilol also. If a person acts like the shamay, then fine. And if they act like the tilol, it's also fine. Either way, whether a person lies... Not really against it. Well, because in his time, maybe there wasn't an issue. Everybody knew the halacha about the tilol already. Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, this was shortly after the halacha happened. Yeah. So this is generations later. So Rabbi Chesel's thing, you want to do like this Shema and lie down for the evening Shema and get up for the morning Shema, fine. You want to do like this Hillel, you can also do. Rabbi Yosef says no. Also, to give a bit Shema, also be like quote. No, if a person does like this Shema, then what he did doesn't count. One second. What he did doesn't count for anything. Now you actually have a machlokas rishonim. Does this mean that he actually is not yotze kriyishma? Yeah, some of the rishonim say that what it means is, even though of course we don't write say yotze no matter how he says it, but the chachamim have the ability to say that the way that you said shema is not valid midrabanan, and therefore that you have to say it over again. The other way of looking at it is, no, it doesn't mean he's not yotze kriyishma. It just means that what he did doesn't count for anything. He didn't accomplish anything by it. But shema, he's still yotze. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings like that. That a person, for example, lies down for the evening Shema or gets up for the morning Shema, fine, they're doing this a minute shtus, it's whatever, but nevertheless, they are Yotze Shema. They don't have to say it over again. Okay. We're talking about Shema where a person is doing it to the Yotze to the Mitzvah. Kriyashma Shalamita is not to the Yotze to the Mitzvah. If a person daven ma'ariv and said shema, that's fine. Nevertheless, though, it's not part of the mitzvah of saying shema twice a day, unless the person daven before tzeis, and now he's saying shema again by night in order to be yotzei. Okay. So Rav Yosef is saying also could be shema like also like kum. It's not, as in fact Rav Yosef says, we have a mishnah in Sukkah that says misha hayorosha v'ruba v'sukkah v'shulchanim v'tehabayis, a person who had his head and most of his body inside the sukkah and a table inside the house. So the Gemara discusses in Sukkah, but there are two possibilities. One is it means the sukkah is physically too small to fit the table, and the other is the sukkah is large enough to fit the table, but for whatever reason he didn't want to schlep the table out to the sukkah. So he's eating by the edge of the sukkah, and the house is inside. V'shamei poskun of v'sillul machshirin. V'shamei says it's posel, v'sillul says it's kosher. Omrulahen v'sillul v'shamei. So v'sillul says to v'shamei, I'll prove to you that it's okay to do that. Ma'isa shahochu ziknei v'shamei v'ziknei v'sillul avakas Rav Yechon ben Achironis. Happened once that the elders of v'shamei and the elders of v'sillul went to visit Rav Yechon ben Achironis. They found him in that, like that. His head and most of his body was in the sukkah, and his table was in the house. So again, either it was a physically small sukkah, and the table wouldn't fit, or he just didn't bring the table in. And they didn't say anything to him. So Basil says, obviously, there's no problem with doing that. So the Shammai answered them, Mishom Raya, you bring a proof from that? As a matter of fact, they did say something to him. Im Kain Hayita Noyig. If that's how you've always done every year sukkahs, lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha, then you've never properly been mekayim the mitzvah of sukkah.
They didn't know that,
Bishamah? No, Bishamah didn't know that Bishamah had said that. Maybe the Zikni Bishamah left after that and didn't know, I don't know, whatever. So the point is, we see from that the same way in that case, the halacha is actually like Bishamah. That's one of the few cases where the halacha is that you can't have the table inside the house. You have to have the sukkah has to be large enough to fit the table, at least 7x7 tefachim, because the person takes up 6x6, and that the table has to actually be in the sukkah, not that you're sitting by the edge of the sukkah and eating with the table outside it. So there the halacha is like the shamai, and if a person does like the tilo, then it's no good. So that's what we're saying, loikiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. So the same thing in reverse, here in our Mishnah and in most places where the halacha is like the tilo, then doing like the shamai doesn't count. Rav Nachman Yitzchak also could do Rav Shammai Chayiv Misa. In fact, Rav Nachman Yitzchak says if a person acts like Rav Shammai in this connection, then he's Chayiv Misa. Midei Shemayim, of course. the Tanan, as we said in our Mishnah, Omer Paifin, Aniyah used to Boba Derech, Better Paifin, saying in our Mishnah, I was traveling on the road, the Tasty Liquids Kedivigas Shammai, I leaned over, I lay down, the Seishma, like the Shammai says, the Sikanti Basim and Penal Lustim, and I was putting myself in danger before the bandits, and the Mishnah says, Omer, like, Kedaiha used to Lachal Basim, you would have deserved to be, yeah, we said in the Mishnah, that you would have deserved anything that happened to you, you would have been responsible for your own death or harm or whatever, because you violated what Basil said. So we see therefore that a person follows this. Yeah, not like Rabbi Chezkel says that if you want to do like the Shammai Gezunta, hey, no, you have no business doing like the Shammai. And again, you even have Poskim who say that if a person does, he's not Yotze Krishma, and he has to say it over again. The halacha is not like that. The halacha is the Chachamim didn't impose that on him to say Shema again, but nevertheless it's a bad minute to do.
So then the time of Mashiach is going to be reversed.
Maybe. I don't know. We say that in the times of Mashiach, then the halacha will be like the Shammai, and obviously it won't be a bad minute anymore. Okay. Mishnah says, Bashachar, in the morning when you say Shema, Mevorach Shtayim Vafanei Avachas Lacharei. You say two brachas before Shema and one afterwards. So we say Yotze Ur and Avach Olam, and afterwards we say Emes V'Yachriv, which finishes with Gal Yisrael. Over Erev Vorach Shtayim Vafanei Avach Shtayim Lacharei. In the evening, it's two brachas before and two after. You have before it, you have Hamari Varovim and Ava Solam, which ends with Ova Am Yisrael, and after it, you have Emes V'Emuna, which ends with Gal Yisrael and Hashkidim. Achas Aruka V'Achas Ksara. One long and one short. Rashi, by the way, brings over here, so altogether, you have seven brachas in connection with Shema, because you have a prophet, and tell them, Sheva Bayem Hilal Tifa, seven times a day, David HaMelech says that prayer. You say, therefore, seven brachas, we say, in connection with Shema. So achas arucha v'achas tzara, one is long and one is short. Rashi explains we're referring specifically to the brachas in Ma'ariv that are after Shema. The bracha emes v'emunah is longer, and the bracha hashkivenu is shorter. Tosfos says that's not what it means. In fact, Tosfos says after all, sometimes we add tiyutim in the bracha.
So you consider hashkivenu as part of the bracha?
No, hashkivenu is a second bracha. It's a shorter bracha. It's shorter than emes v'emunah. Anyway, Tosfos learns that Tosfos says achas arucha v'achas tzara doesn't mean one is long and one is short. It means whether you want it to be short or whether you want it to be long. You're allowed to say these brachas in a shorter version, which is just the way we have it in the Siddur, versus you're allowed to say them longer and add piyutim or whatever. This whole question of adding piyutim actually is very controversial among the Poskim. The question of adding piyutim in places in davening where you're not supposed to interrupt, for example, in the middle of the brachas of Shema, is very controversial. So you have poskim who allow it, and therefore in some siddurim you can find piyutim that they add in the middle of the bracha yotzer, in the middle of the bracha avasolam, or avarabba, and there's no stuff, whatever. But then you have other poskim that are very against that, and they say it's one thing you want to add it during chazaras hashach, because then at least there's less of an issue of a hesbit, but don't be adding them between Shabbat and the brachas of Shema, or within the brachas of Shema themselves. That's all minhag. In general, we don't say much piyutim, but even on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and then Tfilas Kaal, Tfilas Geshem, when we do, they're only in Chazaras Hashem. Unlike in Nusach Ashkenaz, where they have other ones that are scattered throughout the brachas of Shema. Okay. Continues the Mishnah. Mokum Sha'amur Laharich Einer Ashoy Lekaster. Where the Chachamim said that a bracha should be long, you're not allowed to shorten it. Lekaster Einer Ashoy Laharit, where bracha is supposed to be short, you're not supposed to make it long. Lachtoim Einer Ashoy Shalai Lachtoim, when the Chachamim said that you could finish off a bracha with Baruch Ata Hashem, you know, we have many times when you have a bracha that has a whole paragraph and then it finishes Baruch Ata Hashem, whatever. So Einer Ashoy Shalai Lachtoim, you're not allowed to not be choisim like that. Shalai Lachtoim, and if the Chachamim set up the bracha that you don't finish it, for example, let's say the bracha on food or the bracha on most mitzvahs, Einer Ashoy Lachtoim, you're not allowed to make up your own nusach and be choisim. You have to follow the nusach. And here also, so this also factors into this machlokes I was just mentioning. Does this mean, for example, that there's a certain length, let's say, of the bracha emes v'yachid, or the bracha yotzer, and you're not allowed to lengthen it, then you can't add piyotim. Or does it mean, just laharich and lakaster means, for example, that you're not allowed to change the format of it, let's say, to not finish with bracha ha'asham yotzer ha'oros, of the bracha itself, but we're not talking about piyotim that are added in the middle of the paragraph. Okay, the Gemara asks, my mevorech. Okay, so Gemara asks, my mevorech. What bracha are you saying? The two brachas of Shema in the morning, what are they? Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Yoshi, Amar of Oshia, Yotze Orav Orav Hashem. The first one is Yotzer Or Rechosh. But Tzlach points out, the Gemara is not just asking what the brachas are. You can ask any kid who has learned in Cheder, and they can tell you the brachas. The question is, why are we saying the particular Nusach that we are? The fact is, we have, the Gemara is going to discuss now, why are we saying Yotze Urva Rechoshech, why are we using that wording? In the next bracha, do we say Avas Olam or Ava Rabba? So the Tzach explains, that's the premise of the question. The question is not, what are the brachas? You can open up a siddur and see the brachas. The question is, why are we saying these, what is the particular, what is the correct Nusach, what is the correct Nusach that we should be saying?
So what do we say, Mine said Lama?
No, is it Mine? What words are you saying in these brachas? In other words, when it comes to the bracha afterwards, it's very clear. You say Amos V'yatsu. At night, it's very clear. You say Amos V'amona. So actually, the Gemara is going to mention that later, but whatever. The point is, right now we're focusing, why do we say Yotze, not why, but this that we're saying Yotze Urav Urav Choshef, shouldn't the wording be different? We say Avas Olam, should it be, or should it be Ava Rava?
Why should it be different?
That's the Gemara is going to discuss. The question is, Lema Yotze Urav Urav Noiva. The question is, Choshef is a negative word, so why are we saying that Hashem forms light and creates darkness? Instead, we should use a nicer expression, Lema Yotze Urav Urav Noiva. We should say that Hashem creates light and forms Noiva. Where Noiva can mean night also, but I mean, Noiva basically means a glow. I don't know if it would be like a more euphemistic way of referring to the darkness. The answer is to the chdiv. Okay, but it's not complete darkness, but it's not complete light either. But
it's more light than
dark. Fine. And also, as Mara points out at the beginning of Psochim, the word Naghi, which is related to the word Noiva, means night. So let's say, Yotze Urav Urav Noiva. The answer is to the chdiv. True, but the nusach of the bracha is the way it is in the pasuk. There's a pasuk in Yeshaya that says Yotze Urav Urav Choshech. So therefore, we follow that. So the question is, Elamai after Oyse Shalom Avoyre Ram Mitokamin, but that the rest of that pasuk goes in Yeshaya goes Oyse Shalom Avoyre Ram. The fact is, we don't say that. Kedushin in Yeshaya it says Yotze Urav Urav Choshech Oyse Shalom Avoyre Ram. We don't say that. Instead, we say Ovoira Etako, Mi Kamin and Kedichtiv. We don't deal with that part. We don't say like it says in the Pasuk. Elachiv Rav Karin and Akol, Lishnamalia. The Pasuk says that Hashem creates evil, but that Hashem creates badness, but we change that to be euphemistic and we say Akol, to use a nicer language. Hochanami, Leiman Noiga, Lishnamalia. The same way, why don't we say Yotze Urav Urav Noiga? And also, Ela Omar Rava. So Rava says, no. The reason why we say Choshech is not just because of Lashon HaPasuk, but midas yoim b'layla or midas layla b'yoim. We have to have, in the bracha, we have to mention the Hashem's creation of the day during the night and Hashem's creation of the night during the day. We have to show, in other words, that Hashem created both of them.
Why?
Well, for one thing, it shows that we don't chas v'shalom believe that there are different deities who created day and night. But
this specific point.
Because here is where we're praising Hashem for the light, Yotze Urav. So therefore, we also have to mention Choshech. So the question is, Bishlem midas laila b'yoyim k'damin, Yotze Urav Urav Choshech. Okay, so we can see how in the morning davening, we're mentioning the night, because we're saying the words of Urav Choshech. Ela midas yoyim b'laila heichem hashkamala. Where do you have during the nighttime davening that we're mentioning the daytime? Amar Abaya. Because we say in the bracha Asher b'dvarim ma'ariv aravim at night, we say Golo or mipnei choshech or choshech mipnei or. Hashem rolls away light because of the in the presence of darkness and the darkness to make way for the light.
But that's only at night.
That's the point. During the night we mention or even though it's nighttime, and during the day we mention choshech even though it's daytime. Because we have to show that they're interdependent. We have to show that they were both created and managed and then controlled by Hashem.
So in the morning, we say
the daytime, we say Yotze Urav, but we also say Urav Choshech to recognize the night as well. And during the night, we have to say Golo Urav Mipnei Choshech, Choshech Mipnei Urav to mention the light of the daytime as well. Okay, so that's the first bracha. So that explains why we say the nusach that we do, Yotze Urav Urav Choshech, Oyse Shalom Urav Urav Nekoil. We're mentioning Choshech in order to mention, because we have to mention Choshech even by the day. And we're saying we change the end of the positive Oyse Shalom Urav 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 to be more euphemistic, and we say Oyse Nekoil. Okay. Or Boreh.
More positive, yeah.
Okay. What's the second? The Idach Ma'i. What's the Nusach of the second bracha? So here you have a machlit. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel, Ava Rabba. Rabbi Yehuda says in the name of Shmuel, the Nusach begins Ava Rabba. V'chein Uri Le Rav Elazar Le Rav Pedas Brei, so also Rav Elazar taught his son Rav Pedas, Ava Rabba. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learn in fact like that in a brisa. Ein Oyim Avas Olam Ela Ava Rabba. You don't say Avas Olam, but rather you say Ava Rabba. 1 second. Rabbanon Amri Abach Olam. The Rabbanon argue with that though, and they say Abach Olam. As in fact, you have a pasuk. The Abach Olam Ahavkich. You have a pasuk in Yirmiyah. I have loved you with an eternal love. Okay, Meshachtich Chosad. Therefore, I've drawn you along with Chesed. So the Rabbanon are saying you should say Abach Olam. On the side of it here, it mentions that in fact the Rif and the Rosh have the opposite Gersa in the Braisa, when you said that Ein Omer, that the other way, right? Ein Omer, Ava Rava, Ela Avas Olam. So you actually have different Gersos among the Rishon. The result is that you have different Nuschos to this very day. You have in Nusach Ashkenaz, what they do is, they have the Gersa as we have it in the Gemara in front of us, where you have one opinion says Ava Rabba, and the other where the Braisa says Ein Omer Avas Olam Ela Ava Rava, whereas the Rabbanon are disagreeing in Avas Olam. So in Nusach Ashkenaz, what they do is they compromise. They say Ava Rabba in Shachris and Avas Olam in Ma'ariv. So they're Yosef both. Nusach Sfard is that you always say Avas Olam. Nusach Sfard is you always say Avas Olam. In fact, it's interesting. There's a note in the Alter Rebbe's original Siddur. There's a note that also on Shabbos you say Avas Olam. And the reason for that note, Sharakol explains, is because Dain Raskin explains in his Siddur that because you can find three Chaim or other such Sfarim, that you suppose that even if you say Abba Olam the rest of the week, you're supposed to say Abba Rabba on Shabbos, and therefore the author never wants to tell you not like that. You always say Abba Olam.
What's the difference in meaning between Abba Rabba and Abba?
Well, Abba Rabba means great love, and Abba Olam means either eternal love or the love of the world. The author never, in fact, expands on that a bit in some of the later Prok Mokanya in the Mem and the Perek Mem Gimel Mem Dalet. The Alter Rebbe talks about that Abba Olam is the regular kind of Abba that a regular person feels for Hashem, that Olam in the sense of world, a person realizes the greatness of Hashem as it's shown, as it's expressed in the world, and that brings him to a love of Hashem. And that's what we have before that. We talk about how the Malachim are praising Hashem, you need these great kind of the Malachim have Abba, some have Yira. But the point is, in other words, the fact that we say that the Malachim and the planets and everything praise and serve Hashem, that kind of thing brings a person to Ava and Yira of Hashem. So therefore, it's Ava's Olam. It's an Ava that's brought about by the world. As opposed to Ava Rabba, is a very transcendent level of Ava that only great tzaddikim are zoicha to. An Ava like the kind of pleasure that the neshama has in Gan Eden. So maybe for that reason, maybe it has to do with that therefore the Alter Rebbe chose that we always say Abba Solem, because most of us are not on the Abba Rabba level. But again, Nusach Ashkenaz, they say Abba Rabba in Shachas. Amr of Yehuda Amr Shmuel. Hishkim Lishna, if a person gets up early to learn, Ad Shalai Kara Krishma, if he wants to do this before he says Shema, Sorech Lavarech, then before he learns, he needs to make the brachas on Torah. He needs to say the brachas on Torah before he learns. The Gemara mentions in various places that why was the Beis Hamikdash destroyed and the Jewish people sent him to Golos is Shalad Berachu B'Torah Tchila, because they didn't make a bracha before they said Torah, before they learned Torah, which one idea is, in other words, they're just learning it as a science or something rather than a Chochmas or a Ritzon Shalachar Shbarachu. So we have to say a bracha before we learn Torah. The Gemara is going to start discussing that you have a few brachas. There's different opinions among the poskim whether the brachas that we say amount to two or three. We say the bracha al divrei Torah or last of the divrei Torah. There's different neschos in the Gemara that we're going to have soon. You have the haragma. Some poskim say that the haragma is a continuation of the same bracha. Others say that it's a separate bracha. And then you have Ashabah Habana. So you have two or three brachas, depending how you look at it. So Rav Yehuda is telling us that if a person is getting up early to learn before he says Shema, Sorech Lavarech, then he has to first make the brachas on Torah. Misha Kora Krishma, but if he first said Krishma with his brachas, Ein Sorech Lavarech, then he doesn't have to make the brachas on Torah anymore. Shetvan Nifter Ba'Ava Rabba, because he's already been Yotzeh with Ava Rabba, because Ava Rabba, Solem, whatever, has in it, where we ask Hashem, the same really been Bino Lahav and Lahav still,
if he says with
the brachas before, then he's potter from Birkas HaTorah.
And if he says it, it's the brachas of Batalah.
We'll be stopping here in a couple of minutes, but we might as well talk about actually. So first of all, in Shulchan Aruch it talks about the question. Tosfos starts by discussing it over here. After you say the bracha, do you have to learn right away? You know, like for example, you make a bracha on an apple, you have to eat the apple right away. Otherwise, the bracha lebatol. Do we say the same thing as far as Birkas HaTorah? So But when we say, for example, a person says morning brachas, and they say, and they say there's two or three brachas on Torah, do they have to learn right away? So one possibility is yes, the same way as Birkas HaMitzvot, the same way as Birkas HaNes, or whatever. The other possibility is, and in fact, actually, Tosfos brings from the Yerushalmi that seems to say yes. Tosfos, the Yerushalmi says about this din that we're quoting about saying Abba Rabba and being Yotze Birkas HaTorah, that would only work if he right away after that he learned some Torah. And actually, in Shulchan Aruch, because what it means right after that, it would have to mean after Shema and after Shemoneh Esrei, because you can't interrupt at that point to learn. So if a person were to learn right after Shema and after Shemoneh Esrei, so the question is that actually required? The Tosfos discusses not necessarily. It's one thing when it comes, maybe you could say, because Abba Rabba is not the real bracha on Torah. After all, the real brachas on Torah are the ones we say in morning brachas. So if a person is trying to get away with saying Abba Rabba and being Yotze, then fine, you could argue maybe he has to learn right afterwards in order to be Yotze. But when we say the morning brachas, and among them we say the brachas on the Torah, not necessarily do you have to learn right away in order to...
So 1 second. When you say the brachas in the morning, do you have to, in your mind, yotze yourself of saying, I'm going to learn later on?
Well, so according to what Tosfos is saying over here, you don't necessarily have to learn right there on the spot. Now, practically speaking, we do. In order to be yotze, the possibility that we do right afterwards say, we say, by Gabba Hashem Moshe Leimer, we say Elu Dvorim. With that, we yotze the minimum amount of learning Torah. So that way we are actually learning Torah right after Brach. But nevertheless, the fact is, even if he didn't right away, then most of the posts can say he still will be Yotze. As opposed to if he doesn't say morning Brach, if he doesn't say the Brach is on Torah in the morning, and instead he's saying Avos Olam, and then Shema, then he would have to learn afterwards in order to be Yotze. Tosfos also brings up another point. You know, for example, let's say when it comes to Sukkah, a person says the bracha loisha b'sukkah, and they eat something in the sukkah, and if they leave the sukkah, and then decide an hour later they want to eat again, they have to then make loisha b'sukkah. Why don't we say the same thing with learning Torah, that a person should have to make the bracha on Torah every time they learn? The Tosfos says the reason is because Talmud Torah, a person is chayven all the time, so therefore you can't say that. As opposed to sukkah, a person is not obligated to eat in the sukkah all the time. With that said, though, the Rosh has a different explanation. The Rosh says maybe that would only apply to somebody who really is always learning Torah, and even when he's working or whatever, he's still thinking of it as just a break between times learning Torah. He has to take a break because he has to earn a living, but mainly, fundamentally, he wants to be learning Torah the whole time. You could argue, says the Rosh, that somebody who learns a little bit in the morning and says, okay, that's it, I'm done for the day, and later on in the day, let's say he changes his mind and decides to learn a little more, maybe he would have to make the bracha again. The halacha is not like that, though. The halacha is that in that sense, the brachas on Torah are much like the other morning brachas. We don't say, for example, let's say a person says shasali kol tzarchi about the fact that he has shoes. You don't say if later on in the day he takes off his shoes and then puts them on later and you should make the bracha again. The same way with the Birkas HaTorah, the halacha is that you don't say them again. Even if he stopped learning in between, even if he napped in between, he doesn't say the brachas on Torah later on. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem.